5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Port Arthur. They're two words that mean so much to Australia. One of the most pivotal times in our modern history that changed us forever. When our worst serial killer committed the biggest mass murder on a quiet Sunday in sleepy Tasmania. Now this incident is at the centre of a debate regarding whether or not the tale leading up to that event, which saw one person kill 35 people and injure 23 others, should be made into a movie. If it's a documentary, fine. Facts are laid out and a plethora of voices are included, with a view to educate about the atrocities that occurred. But the Hollywood treatment? Not so much. Because with a feature film, just by its very nature, we need to at some point in the script show or elicit sympathy for specific characters. That's how stories work, regardless of whether or not they are fictional or based on true stories. But while we all love true crime stories and podcasts and insider tales, there are always victims that are too often than not forgotten about, and how projects like this can cause really deep impacts and trigger them even further. Look at the outcry at the most recent Charles Manson story, which is adapted by Quentin Tarantino, all of those movies and TV series that were spawned from 9/11, and more recently, season 4 of The Crown. The stories about the modern royals, like Charles and Princess Diana, are apparently causing grief in the House of Windsor. And rightly so. It's pretty confronting. And given that most of us barely know our own history, let alone international history or that of the monarchy, it's pretty hard to deduce fact from fiction on that show, regardless of how beautifully shot it is. But could a feature film about Port Arthur be a step too far for us here? What do you think? Is it a case of being too soon or an issue of being respectful to the friends, families and survivors of the tragedy? I'd love to know what you think, so drop us an email, thewestlive@wanews.com.au. Coming up today, it's all about borders and space and why the entertainment industry is calling for the complete abolition of the 2 square metre rule for the silly season. We're going to talk to the boss of the pubs and club scene about why this is happening and why he wants it and what to expect when we all go out for Christmas drinks in the city and around our entertainment precincts around the state. We're also going to be joined by our good friend of the show, the federal member from Perth, Patrick Gorman, to discuss what he has in store and what Canberra has in store for us in 2021, which cannot come soon enough. We've got a big show, so let's get into it.
The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
Premier Mark McGowan yesterday delivered an early Christmas gift, opening our borders to all states and territories except South Australia. But there are still COVID restrictions in place, including the 2 square metre rule, which will be ruled out for places of worship moving forward. So how does this impact Perth's pubs, restaurants and clubs? Joining me up first this morning is the Australian Hotels Association Chief Executive, Bradley Woods. Bradley, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Jenna. How are you?
Great to have you on the show. Now, Health Minister Roger Cook has said that the 2 metre rule is here to stay until a vaccine is rolled out. Is that going to be sustainable for your industry and your charges?
Well, there's a lot of businesses that are obviously operating at only 50% capacity. Mm-hmm. The 1 in 2 square metre rule is based on a 50% reduction in the number of patrons that they would normally have. Mm-hmm. And for some businesses, particularly those in the food and catering side of business, the Christmas New Year period is critical for their operations.
Of course.
And this reduction in capacity is going to have a huge impact. We understand, of course, that with the opening of the borders, there comes restrictions and there comes a need to contain activity. Mm-hmm. And that does mean that the industry has to accept that there's going to be further controls and restrictions in place. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when there's no evidence of community spread, there's no evidence that COVID-19 is in WA, in the greater community, we think there is certainly an argument for some venues, and in particular those where you've got functions and events where people are seated, to be able to sit down and to have greater numbers, particularly if they're not moving around as well. I think the scenario where you've got large venues where people are standing, or you've got concerts and events where there's mosh pits and those types of things, there's a reason and a rationale as to why there's certain restrictions in place there.
Of course.
But for the broader hospitality industry, particularly that in the food space, we think there's an opportunity here for the government to be a little bit more flexible in the lead up to Christmas and the New Year. There's a lot of corporate events, there's a lot of family get-togethers, where people are not able to be catered because venues have got to restrict their numbers.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that's the key word, flexibility, right, Bradley? Like, you guys in the hospitality industry have bent over backwards when it came to rolling out health and safety precautions when we first came out of lockdown. You've helped tirelessly behind the scenes when it came to contact tracing and things like that. Are you getting any traction in explaining the rationale to this to the government?
Well, certainly the Health Minister has listened to us. He's taken on board the issues that we've advanced. At the end of the day, it's not his decision. Mm-hmm. It is the Chief Health Officer's decision, and those are matters that we're hoping that will be taken on board. I think we've got to look at it in terms of what are the implications, particularly around the Christmas period, where you've got a whole range of businesses that would normally cater for in the lead up to Christmas, in the weeks in the lead up, but also Christmas Day itself or New Year's, where there's functions and events and dinners, where they've got to restrict the numbers. It does mean that there is capacity issues and we can't sometimes get into our favourite venues. I think if you go out on a Friday or Saturday night in Perth and try to make booking for your favourite restaurants or local pub where people are dining, it is not always easy to get in and there's restrictions there. And what we're trying to do is to accommodate that. At the same time, I think the public is understanding of that at the moment. But with the borders coming down, there is an increased risk of COVID spread. As you've said, we've tried to do everything we can to work with the state government to put in place better sanitation, safety, sanitization, teaching the staff about the appropriate measures to take. And the public have worked with that. We've got the QR code / contact tracing, new contact tracing system coming to effect this week. And we've certainly been working to make sure the industry adopts that very quickly and to support the state government's electronic QR code system as a universal practice. So we're doing everything we can to cooperate and collaborate with the state government. Mm. We think there is a halfway point between having no restriction at sort of what they call phase 5 and phase 4, and that's, you'd probably call it phase 4.5, and that is some moderated changes, just like they've done with churches or religious institutions, going to 60% as opposed to 50%. And we think there's some compromise in between. The other side of it is that the conference events and the meetings incentives business is also huge for Western Australia. It's worth hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And we've got a number of function centres and event centres that need to be able to operate at capacity. And whilst it's 1 in 2 square metres, they can't operate with their true capacity as well. And so it's not just the pubs, the bars, the clubs and the dining side of things, but it's also that business meeting part of the hospitality industry as well that's being artificially limited. And given the fact that Australians normally take in their overseas trips and spend about $65 billion a year, there's a lot of opportunity to have that money redirected internally within Australia and for them to be spending that. Certainly, we'd be encouraging East Coast travellers to be spending it in Western Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the 2 metre rule, is that actually being obeyed or policed in places around WA?
Well, whether it's policed or not, I don't know, and that's a matter for the regulators to put in place. We do know that there have been some venues that have been given directions, and there's certainly different authorised officers out of police and other, liquor enforcement, liquor licensing, local government, that have been doing counts and checking numbers within venues. We certainly know that. We've had our members in the hotel and pub sector talk to us about the fact that, you know, they are being inspected and they are being counted, and they do have to keep those numbers in place. The difficult side of it is, of course, is that the 1.5 metre of distancing and how we behave within a premises mm-hmm. is something that is up to us as individuals.
Yeah.
The law says that the venue's got to allow no more than X number of people in at 1 and 2 square metres, but what we do while we're in the venue is up to the responsibilities then on us to make sure we're not getting too close.
Mm.
I think the complacency that's set into WA over the last couple of months as a result of having no COVID-19 community spread does have an adverse side of things, and that's why the state government has been extremely cautious yeah. about letting people in from interstate. But we've also got to have realistic business conditions that reflect the fact that there is no community spread.
Mm.
The Premier has said that if there is an explosion or there is a reported number of cases in certain states, he'll put the hard border back in place very quickly. So the government will take what actions it needs to. But at the same time, there needs to be some flexibility so that we can see more people spend money domestically within WA. The borders will be open. We're open again for business. And we've got to make sure that the hundreds of millions of dollars in hospitality spending can be spread throughout the community.
Yeah, indeed. Are you concerned, Bradley, moving forward, I guess, as we look into the new year where JobKeeper and JobSeeker slowly wind back, are you going to see businesses close?
Well, we hope not. We hope not. It's certainly, Jenna, it's a concern that businesses become overtly reliant on JobKeeper.
Mm-hmm.
As the economy opens, then well-run businesses or those that have certainly proven the test of tide over the past 10 months should be okay. And I think, WA is certainly in the strongest position of all the states economically for mm-hmm. those businesses to survive. We may have some casualties, but we've certainly worked with our membership along the way to make sure they've got the best advice, the best information to tactically move and to very quickly pivot where they needed to keep their business in a survivable position.
Mm-hmm.
Whether JobKeeper or not impacts on those businesses when it eventually is phased out or reduced, it's very hard to tell. It'll be an individual case-by-case basis.
Yeah. Are you hearing, because we're getting a lot of anecdotal evidence, specifically in tourism places and things like that, it's so hard to get people to pull pints, make coffees, work yeah. the pass and things like that. Are you hearing that as well? Is it hard to get staff at this point in time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. We're so reliant in the past on working holiday makers mm-hmm. moving throughout the state, international students studying at university or higher colleges that are allowed to do their 20 hours a week
yeah.
to also work in hospitality venues. And that's made it really tough. So over the last number of months, we've been talking to the state government about those issues, talking to the federal government about those issues mm-hmm. as well. But mm-hmm. what we will see with the borders coming down with New South Wales and Victoria is a huge opportunity to attract more workers into the state,
sure.
particularly those people who've been out of work within Victoria for many, many months and are looking for work and wanting to work and wanting to move around.
Mm.
There's huge opportunities to attract those people into Western Australia to have them spend. And there is, of course, the local population, those people who are on JobSeeker at the moment, as that's phased out,
mm.
There will be a need for them to work, and hopefully that will be a greater incentive. Just as the agriculture industry and the picking sector in various parts of the state is massively undersupplied at the moment,
yeah.
the hospitality side of it is also, and it comes at a weird time when we've got so much huge demand for regional tourism accommodation. it's always the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get this best of both worlds and worst of both scenarios
yeah.
at the same time.
You want to go and have a holiday down south, but you don't want to wait 40 minutes for your takeaway coffee. I think that's what we're going to have to get used to.
Exactly. So, I think there have been worst case scenarios for the industry over the years. Your earlier story on Port Arthur and Tasmania. Mm-hmm. I was in Tasmania at the time of the massacre.
Oh,
And so, you know, what we experienced in Tassie back in 96 was just horrendous. You know, we went from having nearly a peak tourism period of nearly 90% occupancy in hotels around the state down to 5% within 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
And it took over a year to sort of get back up over 50% again. And it was that type of, you know, something that was totally uncontrollable.
Yeah.
But it sat in the people's minds that didn't want to travel to the state, and it had a huge impact on the industry, and it was totally uncontrollable.
Mm.
With something like a pandemic, it's uncontrollable, but it can be arrested and it can be brought back, whereas what happened in Tasmania was, you know, it was a human tragedy, it was a human loss of life, but it also had massive impacts on that state economy as well. It was no one's fault except that the madman who committed the crime.
Yeah. God, that's a really interesting. And then you look at now you look at Tasmania, and it's the biggest hotspot in terms of tourism and events and things like that. So fingers crossed, I think one of the most resilient industries is definitely that of the hospitality one. So good, congratulations on all the work that you've done throughout
COVID. And it does come back, Jenna.
It does. It will. We will drink again. We will eat and have lunch again, I promise.
Absolutely.
Now, in terms of QR codes, for people that may be a bit concerned to hand over their data with the Safe WA app, will every venue around WA be able to have the analog version, so you can take a pen and paper and jot your name down there?
They're required to. So if they don't have they're required to have a backup, so that if someone doesn't have a phone or doesn't have the app, or they don't want to do it, they can do the analog, write down the information.
Great.
And that's part of the regulations that the government has issued. We're encouraging our industry to certainly use the state government's QR code system. It's the most secure and confidential system. I've seen in other states, like Queensland, for instance, where there's no government QR code data recording system, that there are literally hundreds of different apps being used, and it means that every time you go to a venue, you've got to start from scratch and put in all your details from scratch again.
Oh, dear.
Whereas in WA, it's one app. You open it up, shoot, bang, and it's got the QR code there straight away, and you don't have to record your name and information because it automatically knows who you are, and that's it. And so it's so much easier. And the data's held privately by the state government and the health department, not to be used for any other purpose except contact tracing.
Yeah.
Whereas in other states like New South Wales and Queensland, it's held by private companies that can use that data for a whole range of reasons, and that's really concerning.
Yeah, indeed. Well, AHA WA's Chief Executive Bradley Woods, thank you so very much for your time. Looking forward to catching up with you over the festive season for a well-earned drink. You've definitely deserved it. Thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thanks very much, Jenna. Have a great day.
Well, we've also seen some interesting developments in Parliament during COVID period, including a national cabinet, bringing together the leaders of each state via teleconference, and we've also seen how quickly it can unravel. There's an interesting opinion piece in today's West Australian by the Federal Member for Perth, Patrick Gorman, and he joins me in the studio now. Patrick, welcome back to The West Live.
Thank you for having me, Jenna.
It's so nice to see you again.
It's good to be here.
Now, I have to say, I'm very excited because you are... I think you need to keep looking at your what you're almost going to be a dad for the second time in within minutes.
Within days.
Okay.
I don't think I've got it. I think I'll get to the end of this interview, so I think we're safe there. But within days, yes, this will probably be the last time I speak to you this year.
Good. Well, very, very excited for you and your family. And I'm sorry to bring that up. I'm just very excited for any time.
Happy to tell your listeners that I'm a very excited dad to be for the second time.
It's fantastic. Now, your piece today is really interesting, the fact that we focus on a global democracy and what is the world going to look like if we, some of the flashpoints, what have they been around the past couple of months, and where do you think we will be come January 1, 2021?
Look, if you'd asked me that question this time last year, I would have been wrong, because obviously over December last year and then into January we saw terrible bushfires followed by the outbreak of COVID, which we are still experiencing. So I think sometimes politicians always want to have all the answers, but I'm just going to be honest and say, I don't know. This is a period of time that is testing us and continuing to test us.
Yes. Yeah. Your piece today focuses on, the need to kind of almost It's kind of like the John Lennon song, come together, people. We need to kind of band together and fix the broken sort of democratic circle that we have. What are some of your ideas, just briefly, for people that may not have had time to have a read?
So what I talk about is basically saying democracy is a fundamental Australian value. Mm-hmm. I'm at a City of Perth citizenship ceremony tonight where our newest citizens, when they give their citizenship pledge, they say, I pledge allegiance to Australia, whose democratic values I share.
Yes.
This is one of those very fundamental pieces. And there's so much more that Australia can do in terms of sharing those democratic values. Mm-hmm. I suggest that we should ask for the UN Democracy Fund to do more. Mm-hmm. It is a small appendage of the United Nations. It should be a big central agency. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see our development goals in terms of helping developing nations, help them do more in terms of building up their democracy. I've seen that firsthand in many countries, including in Afghanistan, where I went and helped with their presidential election recount.
Wow.
In a dusty shed for weeks on end. It sounds much more adventurous and glamorous than it was. But I really believe that democracy is something that actually helps lift people out of poverty, helps everyone feel like they've had a say in the decisions that are made about their lives. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if you look at how we've here in Australia gotten through this year, it's been because, and you mentioned National Cabinet, it's been because everyone's felt like someone at that table they either voted for or they had a say in the fact that they're the decision makers. Mm. And so the more that we can do in expanding democracy and the more Australia can do, given that it is one of our fundamental values, we're so good at it. We helped Indonesia transition to a democracy. That's been good for Indonesia. It's been good for Australia.
Yeah.
We should do more to promote democracy around the world.
I don't know whether it's like a generational thing, but I feel that because we, specifically younger Australians, probably take democracy for granted. It's like, I won't vote because I can't be bothered. Everyone's the same. Do you think that COVID, the silver lining of COVID and the bushfires may make people that were not really tapped into the political cycle and media cycle to get them interested in, say, the state election coming up in March and then the federal election sometime next year?
I agree with you. The federal election will be sometime next year, which I don't think has quite clicked for any of us.
I feel like you're missing a paper bag to breathe into when we talk about that.
But yeah, I do hope that young people feel like they've sort of seen their democracy in action. They've also seen governments actually act quickly.
Yeah.
One of the things I get from young people a lot is they get so frustrated that everything feels like it's, you know, if you're 18, you know, and you say to someone, oh yeah, we're going to look at that. And by the time you're 22, 23, we'll have come up with a policy solution.
Yeah.
That's like a huge chunk of their life where nothing's happening.
Yep.
And now they've seen governments go, oh, well, when we want to, we can push $130 billion out the door like that.
Like that.
Instantly. So I do hope that young people will also increase their expectations of politicians.
Yeah.
That they will actually say, we know that when you want to, you can fix things. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do more about homelessness, you could.
Yeah.
If you wanted to build a new hospital, you would.
Yeah.
It's just about the political will to do it. And so I actually think that when young people have higher expectations of us, we will all rise to the occasion, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more noise we make at a grassroots level, the more we're going to get people will pay attention. So I think it's going to be a really interesting campaign, I think.
Yeah, I think we've got 2020 will be an interesting year for Australian democracy and for Australian voters. They've got a lot of big decisions to make, because the decisions that are made over the next next 2 or 3 years, I think it's similar to the period after World War II. What we do over the next few years will really have impacts on the lives of people for decades to come. I think we'll still, I hope to be in politics for a little bit longer than after the next federal election. I think we'll be dealing with these challenges for years and years to come.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrifying time, but also very fascinating to see how we do rebuild and evolve as a community.
Yes.
There's been a number of issues in the news specifically around China and our relationship. As a West Australian and a West Australian member of federal parliament, how have you felt about the way our relationship with our biggest trading partner in WA has been handled, and what do you think needs to be done?
Well, it has deteriorated. We need to be honest with ourselves that it is not in a good place.
Yeah.
I don't prescribe blame to any one individual on that, but it is very hard to watch, because we know that indeed the wealth that Australia has enjoyed, and indeed the ability of China to lift their people out of poverty. Hundreds of millions of people in China have been lifted out of poverty, in a large part because of China's trading relationships, of which Australia is a key part. If any of that were to be put at risk, that's bad for everyone. It's bad for the Chinese, it's bad for Australia. What needs to be done it's just lots of little bits of diplomacy. I was encouraged to see that Australian diplomats had reached out to their Chinese counterparts in Beijing yesterday.
About time.
Look, that is what they're there for. But we have a great diplomatic service, and I think some of our diplomats in Beijing have one of the toughest jobs within DFAT.
And I guess I didn't mean to be flippant in terms of I can't imagine that type of work is not very very often done in the full glare of a trade issue or in the media. No. So they do a lot of behind the scenes work. Those hardworking DFAT staff, that's for sure.
They do, and we have a great foreign service. The reality is we probably have a foreign service that's a bit small compared to the size of the trading relationships we have and the size of the country that we are and the sort of values that we have as a country and the sort of things we want to see happen across the globe. I also see that the whole world is probably suffering from the fact there hasn't been those face-to-face engagements. Mm. Some of those meetings that would normally happen on the sidelines of the United Nations Leaders Week, those might not be a formal meeting but an incidental meeting that would allow some of these bits of soft diplomacy and gentle nudging to happen in both directions. We're all sort of isolated and stuck in our own countries, and that's not good for diplomacy. And we know that it was, not that long ago that leaders of Australia would take the decision to jump on a boat and go overseas and spend 3 or 4 months abroad because they knew how important it was for Australians to be talking face-to-face with people elsewhere.
Indeed. You do a lot of face-to-face talking with your constituents
in
the seat of Perth. What's a word on the street? What's the scuttlebutt? What are people concerned about moving into Christmas and beyond?
The biggest thing is just jobs and making sure that people have that ability to provide for themselves, the family and the people they care about. I heard what you were talking to Bradley Woods about earlier. The reality is there are a lot of people who feel that their jobs are still in a very uncertain position because there are so many things that could affect whether that job is there next year. We talk about trade, we talk about border arrangements, we talk about potential for second wave lockdowns, all of these things. It is a scary time to be an employee in any situation. Mm. But also there's so many people who are coping with unemployment in a very quiet and dignified way at the moment. And so for me, it is jobs. That is the number one thing that people are raising.
Yeah.
What's great is that the more you go out and talk to people, the more ideas and things you grab, and sometimes you've got to sort of discipline yourself. I did and you get everything. I talked to, had a seniors morning tea with my friend Simon Millman and Roger Cook yesterday.
Dream team. Simon is the member for Mount Lawley.
Member for Mount Lawley at Alexander Park Tennis Club.
Oh, beautiful.
And we had everything from feedback about the types of food at Royal Perth Hospital, which I do have to pass on, to views. Indeed, I had a Chinese Australian come up to me and say she was really embarrassed about the tweet that had been sent out by the foreign ministry. So you get everything from the I don't want to say that the food or RPH is,
but trivial. But this is what is concerning to people, right? Yeah. Like this is, you need to look at that. People care about their own backyard more so now than ever. So I think just being listened to, I think people enjoy from their elected officials. Yes.
And I should say that there's a lot of appreciation for the work that Roger and the public servants have done this year. I think, people see the politicians out there talking about things, but the reality is that the powerhouse behind them are public servants who just get up and do their job every day, not seeking the limelight, not looking for to be adored. They just kind of want to do something good for their community.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen the best of our public service, both state and federal, this year.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I know you need to dash off because you've got so many things to fit in before your beautiful wife does have your second baby.
My last meeting of the Communications and Arts Standing Committee.
So are you taking a little bit of paternity leave?
Yeah, I'm taking, I would say, more than a little bit.
Good.
I think it's important that as community leaders, we actually lead by example. I'll be taking about 3 months off.
Great.
Won't go back. I've got my leave pass from Canberra. Mm-hmm. I'll stay at home in North Perth, be helpful around the house, introduce the new bub to this beautiful city, and take things a bit slower because I think, if you can't do that, and also indeed there's a bit of a baby boom happening in the parliament at the moment. A number of politicians are doing that. I think it's good to sort of normalise the fact that actually you can be a parent and a politician and try and do both well rather than have to trade them off.
Absolutely. You're a fine example of a modern day dad, and we're very, very proud that you've joined us in the studio this morning. Patrick Gorman, Federal Member for Perth. Good luck with baby number two.
Thank you very much, Jenna, and thank you, West Live.
Merry Christmas. Now, coming up, like thousands of people, you've probably already knee-deep in Christmas shopping, but buyer beware. If you haven't started gift buying, you might need to get your skates on, because according to one retail expert, the shelves could be looking pretty bare in a matter of days.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise, good morning.
Good morning, Jenna. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. What a hump day it is. Busy, busy news day. What's kicking things off this morning?
Busy news day. A desperate search is underway in the Swan River for a 30-year-old man. He was driving a boat and fell overboard late yesterday, and he was the only person on board, and police have been searching through the night in the Maylands area.
Oh, no.
Police divers are going into the water at the moment, and witnesses say they found this man's boat doing circles in the middle of the river with nobody on board, so they reported the incident then. So, yeah, not looking good. They haven't found him, and he's been missing for well over 12 hours now.
Oh, horrible, horrible news for all the people out there looking for him and his friends and family. We wish them well. There's been some charges laid in regards to that Wellard hit and run.
Yeah, that's right. A 38-year-old Medina man has been charged with a string of offences, six offences all up over this alleged hit and run in Wellard. You'll remember 19-year-old Isaiah Hayward was injured in this. He's in Royal Perth Hospital and doctors don't know whether he'll walk again. So the man who's been charged over this, the Medina man, is due to face Rockingham Court today.
Interesting. We'll see that on 7 News tonight. Now, a bombshell. Dean Nolder, the Shadow Treasurer, has up stumps.
Yes, I was a bit shocked by this, along with many people, it seems.
Yeah.
He's announced he's quitting state politics ahead of the March election. He's not going to contest the safe Liberal seat of Bateman. He, of course, put his hand up to be the Liberal leader after Lisa Harvey resigned and he pulled out of the leadership race at the last minute. Of course, 33-year-old Zach Kirchhoff got the job. So Mr. Nolder says, though, interestingly, that's not why he's quitting. he says he had a conversation with his wife over the weekend and they decided it would start to, you know, time to start a new chapter in their lives. I imagine that conversation was like, well, I didn't become opposition leader. Do I really want to lose this election and stay in opposition for another 4 years and still not be the leader potentially? But anyway, he's saying that's not why he's quitting. Zach Kirkup has come out and said, you know, it's always disappointing when somebody stands aside, but, you know, he agrees with what Mr. Nolder says, that the Liberal Party is looking to renewal at the moment, and he's going to announce a new-look shadow cabinet in the coming days.
Indeed, indeed. I think that that conversation with Mr. and Mrs. Nolder probably went, Mrs. Nolder, I've had enough of this and we would like you home more. So good luck to the family, and I think the friends and family of politicians deserve a little bit more kudos. So fingers crossed, all good things for the Nolder coming over Christmas and into the Nolders into Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not easy for the families of these politicians either. You know, they're often at committee meetings. They're often, you know, at different events around the state. And it's a big impost on those families, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. Now we've moved from control border to soft border. Victoria, New South Wales, come on in from 12:01 next Tuesday. Have you looked into flights and what's going on? I'm hearing things that people are like, I can't afford a flight to Perth anymore.
No, they're quite expensive. Nikki just texted me this morning to say her mum's coming over for Christmas.
Sorry, Mum.
She's just looking for flights at the moment. So flights arriving on the date the border opens the 8th, so next Tuesday, are about $1,000 one way if you're coming in from Sydney or Melbourne at the moment. But the prices do drop off later in the month. So mid this month, extra services are being put on and Qantas, Jetstar and Virgin are boosting flights by tenfold, really, from Sydney and Melbourne coming into Perth. So we're looking at just over 100 flights a week. So if you can get those flights closer to Christmas time rather than when the border opens, you'll find that there are some cheaper deals available, you know, a few hundred dollars rather than $1,000. Some flights are booked out, so you have to book business if you want to come over and, you know, you're looking at $3,000 one way for that.
Oh, Perth's nice, but geez, 3,000. I do love business class, but geez. Well, good news that the family will be semi reunited come Christmas.
Yes. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to next Tuesday. I think it'll be amazing at Perth Airport. If you've got nothing to do, I reckon that'll be a fun day at the airport.
My nerves and my emotions couldn't handle it. I'd just be a blubbering mess.
Too much.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise, thank you so very much for joining us on the West Live this morning. We'll see you tomorrow. And before that, we'll see you on air on Sunrise on Channel 7. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Have a great Wednesday, Jenna.
Thanks, Maddie. So who would have thought in the middle of a pandemic, it wouldn't just be loo paper and pasta in short supply? Have you tried buying a frock in your size recently? Merchandise is flying off the shelves, and that's potentially a problem, not only for shoppers, but also retailers. Joining me now is Business Squad Managing Director Paul Rowe. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Jenna.
Now, is this shaping up to be a Christmas like no other?
Oh, look, absolutely. We've got a combination of a number of things, a lot of pent-up demand.
Yes.
And as long as the retailers can get a few things right, then we do have the opportunity to have one of the biggest Christmases for years, possibly a decade.
Wow. And when you say pent-up, do you mean because people can't go anywhere, we're sort of landlocked to where we live and things like that, and we just want to get out and spend our money?
Well, exactly. You can't get out and travel the world as many would. January's looking like an unusual month. Normally, everyone would go away in January. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that can't. So what does January look like as far as sales and retailing goes? We've now had a period of what we call in WA the new relative normality. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but we're seeing some of the best house growth since 2006.
Wow.
Now, you know as well as I do, those consumers out there, when they sit there and go, "Oh, my house has gone up, I might have to spend some of the equity." So it's all coming at the same time.
Wow. It seems to be a lot of money that seems to be circulating around the WA economy at this point in time, which is in stark contrast, I guess, to the news we're seeing out of the UK, which probably hasn't handled COVID as well. We see, I think, in the news overnight that Debenhams, which is a great department store in the UK, I think they're slashing 12,000 jobs, and also Topshop have gone into administration. Is there potential for that to happen to more Australian retailers when JobKeeper and JobSeeker dry up come February, March?
Well, look, there is that issue. Arcadia Group, which involves the Topshop, etc., is renowned worldwide as one of the best operators. So if they've gone into administration, then that says something about the general scenario out there in retail land.
Yeah.
So what we need is we need consumers to spend. Mm-hmm. We need them to buy. But at the same time, we need, however they do it, our retailers to have the stock. Mm. As you mentioned on the intro, I had my partner pop out and she said, "I either need to majorly carb up or I need to stop eating for the next week because I've got a size 6 and a size 18 in front of me."
Yeah.
And neither of those is going to work.
Yeah. What is causing that? Is that just because the freight and couriers aren't doing well, or is it because there is just a bit of a backlog with production coming out of countries that historically and traditionally make our garments here in Australia?
Well, if you look at the news lately, we've had China putting tariffs on wine. We've got them putting it on barley. Mm-hmm. We're cutting the meat and fish supplies. So they're cutting the supply of goods into China. What a lot of people don't realise is the goods coming out of China, which is the epicentre for a lot of production in the world's retail market, has been slower and it's been difficult to actually get it here. So it's actually getting the stock to Australia that's been our biggest problem. So at the moment, they're finding it very difficult. I mean, unfortunately, I have a bit of a love of motor vehicles. I follow the industry very much.
Yes.
Classic example, XC Volvo, very big family car. Uh-huh. Everyone always has one. There's normally 18 to 20 used Volvo XC60s for sale at any one time in that sort of T6 market. At the moment, there's one.
What?
And you can put that across all of them. So supply is major. The upside to retail is that where people were saying, "Oh, can't go anywhere, I'll go buy and upgrade my car," you actually can't at the moment because you can't get supply. So where does that money go? Because they still want to spend it. Hopefully, it's going to go into retail and tourism.
Oh, okay. Well, it is really interesting where you look at the car market as well as the Volvo. Is there anything else that's really, really popular out there?
Absolutely. SUVs, twin cab utes. If you have a twin cab ute at the moment that you don't need, I guarantee you'll get better prices than you've ever got. I've got people that I deal with that are buying them interstate and having them shipped over because you just can't get them here in WA.
Wow.
And think about WA as a destination for tourism, etc. Not everybody can go to Bunker Bay and beautiful places like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are putting the caravan or the camper van or the tent in the back of their SUV and heading off. But you need an SUV to do it. So, again, that area is really, really hot at the moment.
So fascinating. One thing that really stresses me out, but I kind of enjoy the furor and the frenzy, is Christmas food shopping on December 24. Are we going to see Christmas Eve shopping in Woolies and Coles filter out to the entire month? And is there going to be enough food and items on the supermarket shelves when we need to prepare for Christmas lunch?
Well, that's a great point, because this year, as of the 8th, as you mentioned just before with Matt, we're going to have all of these visitors coming across to WA. Well, WA is still seen as one of the main places to go because we're safe, we've got great weather, and we've got open areas. So all of these people are going to arrive. We've got the major mining companies now basically putting a hold on all interstate FIFO. So FIFOs will now need to live in WA.
Yeah.
So you've got more and more people. You've got stars, international stars going, ooh, I think WA and other parts of New South Wales, Byron Bay, etc., we should all move there because we've just worked out that America is actually not as safe as Australia.
Yeah.
So we've got all these people coming in, but the food is, you know, unless someone's gone out there and rushed it. Again, seafood's probably an exception because their markets into China are very stuffed.
Yes.
So even this morning, pardon me, they're saying that we will be able to get cooked crays at 20 or 30 bucks a kilo. Now, that's lovely.
Yes.
What a time of year to have it. So if you want to get into food, I suggest you start looking now because this is probably going to be one of the biggest Christmases ever.
Oh, I'm very stressed. Are things going to last if I go shopping, food shopping on the 8th before the shops close on the 7th of December? I'm now worried we're going to have to eat pasta for Christmas lunch.
Well, that'll be different. Although very Australian, we'll have salads and plenty of seafood this year.
It's crazy. Now, I don't know about you, Paul, but I sort of dipped my toe into Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which happened over the past couple of days. Will these put a dent in Christmas retail and Boxing Day sales and things like that?
Well, for the first time last year, Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which gives us that four-day period, Friday to Monday, was massive, and it really did impact on December. I haven't seen the figures from that weekend yet, but from what I gather, it was huge.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, it doesn't mean that we then get our normal December and our January sales. In fact, to be perfectly honest, good luck with January sales anymore, because really they start around November.
Yeah.
And then we have our Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and then we have our December leading to people actually buying presents. And January sales are really not what they used to be. So what I'm hoping is that with the influx of people as of the 8th, with the increase in the prices of real estate, which gives people confidence, the fact that a lot of people have been on JobKeeper or JobSeeker, which is, for many people, a larger amount of money than they've been used to, and they do tend to spend that extra money that they get, I'm very hopeful that we have a very strong December, even though Black Friday sales were massive.
Yeah. I think I was reading early this morning that the America have just, or Northern America have just calculated, and apparently something like 40% of sales were all done on Amazon, that one platform over there. So I think it's just something that's really going to, it'll become like our Halloween, won't it, over here?
Oh, look, absolutely. And, you know, Amazon is far from ensconced here in WA at the moment, and with their distribution site happening out of the airport. It's only a small centre, but that's just the start, and they will build. And I think what we need to realise is that it's going to be clicks and bricks from this point onwards, and probably has been for the last couple of years.
Wow.
And that seamless interaction between the shop front and the online is absolutely integral. We get that right, we'll keep hold of the consumer. If we don't, why would a consumer walk in and look at a size 6 and an 18 when they can go online and have a far greater range of clothes to choose from?
What would you encourage the consumer to do this Christmas? Would you encourage us to get out to department stores and to shopping centres and to malls and things like that to buy from bricks and mortar? Or do you think that it just because of online, what if it's not delivered in time? So what do you think would be the best course of action?
I think it's going to come down to people who are time poor mm-hmm. and people who have that opportunity to go out. Where possible, obviously, it's great to get out there and actually try these clothes on and just go, right, I've got a feeling for what I need. I need an 8, 10, 12, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. I like this style, not that style. And then maybe they go online and assist there. But realistically, as we've found in America, the malls are becoming something of the past. Mm-hmm. People are not hanging out at the malls and going to the diners and going shopping and carrying many bags home. What we're finding is that the population is going, why would I do that? I can stay at home. I can drink my glass of wine, which again, I think only yesterday there was an article saying, beware, if you're shopping online, drinking a glass of wine at the same time can be dangerous.
Indeed.
although, you know, could you think of a cooler way to do it? but if we don't frequent our centres and our bricks and mortar, those will start to quieten down, they will start to slow, and people won't be employed.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, small to medium-sized enterprises are the employers of the majority of Australians.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think there needs to be that balance. And let's be honest, I don't know about you, but I love interacting with real people.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, online has its place.
Yes.
But I like seeing people and just having those characters that we have around Australia.
Indeed, indeed. And who doesn't like a little bit of a self-esteem boost if you are trying on a size 6 and it may not fit, but you just need someone to be your cheerleader outside the change room? You've got to go in store to get that type of service.
Exactly. And oh my God, you look amazing in that.
Yeah, I love that. Indeed. Well, Business Squad Managing Director Paul Rowe and Retail Expert, thank you so very much for explaining Christmas for us. We look forward to talking to you again on the West Live sometime soon.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jenna.
Now, Neds have been a proud sponsor of the West Live throughout the entire spring racing carnival, and we've chatted a lot about how easy it is finding a winner with filter form. But now that Melbourne Cup is well and truly over, we're heading deep into the 2020 Ascot Racing Carnival, and I thought it would be a good time to bring up the Neds Punters Toolbox. The Punters Toolbox is exclusive to the Neds app, and it's a one-stop shop for everything you need to help get you more value on the horses, the greyhounds, and the harness racing out at Gloucester Park. Unleash your punter's toolbox today. It's where punting is made easy and where you can take it to the Neds level. T's and C's apply. See the Neds website for details, but please remember to gamble responsibly. If you need help, call 1800 858 858.
The Wild West.
Ben O'Shea, good morning.
Hey, Jenna, some very good advice there about some Christmas shopping.
I'm stressed. And now when I'm reading that, I know that the Manjimup Cherry Harmony Festival is going ahead this year. Cherries are always a hot commodity item. Is there going to be enough when it kicks off next week?
Oh, that is a very good question. Now, this is your neck of the woods,
yeah.
So I know that you're full bottle on the Cherry Festival and what happens down there. But, yeah, this season, apparently, the cherries have come in late and it's been a pretty light harvest.
Right.
So, yeah, there's probably a question mark over how many cherries will actually be at the Cherry Festival. It's a bit like the Crab Festival, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Crab Festival, but, you know, good luck finding a crab.
Indeed. So so I guess producers are sort of a bit wary that there may be the pips bidding competition will have to be axed.
Well, it is being axed, but not because of a shortage of cherries. I think there'll be enough cherries. There'll be some cherries around at the festival. Some of the producers, instead of having their usual stalls, are going to be doing, selling cherries from their actual farm gate.
Great.
Instead this year.
Lovely.
But the cherry pip spitting, try saying that three times fast.
Yeah.
Has been axed because of COVID.
Of course, of course.
You know, people spitting.
No, absolutely not. No, even if it is for fun. Okay, yeah. We'll get down to the Cherry Harmony Festival in Manji next weekend. It's always a lovely day out, and who doesn't love a cherry tummy ache? It's quite delicious.
Exactly.
And now, what's going on Penguin Island?
Yeah, so the little penguins that live on our Penguin Island are the smallest species of penguin in the world. They're very cute. They really are very cute. But a researcher who's been studying them since 1994 has found that since 2007, there has been an 80% decrease in the little penguin population of Penguin Island, which is, you know, that's very significant. And there are two reasons, and she's listed the reasons, and one of them we can do something about. The other one, probably going to take a bit more effort.
Okay. What are the reasons?
Well, the first one that we can do something about is injuries by boats, like man-made injuries by boats. There's talk over there about moving boat ramps and all this other stuff, and it's becoming more and more popular for people to take their boats over to Penguin Island. It is a lovely spot, but it's also quite shallow around the island, and the penguins kind of swim in the sort of the top meter or so of the ocean, and so it makes them very susceptible to injuries when they get run over by boats, propellers, all that sort of stuff. So we really, I think, need to collectively figure out how we can reduce the number of those injuries before all these penguins are wiped out. The other issue is a little bit harder to fix: climate change.
Oh, yeah, it's probably going to take more of a concerted effort from the entire community.
I'm not sure if the boaties of WA can really do much about that one at this stage. But I think, you know, the change in personnel in the White House probably might have more of a positive impact on the little penguins than anything we can do in WA.
Indeed. Ben O'Shea, thank you so very much for joining us on the West Live today. You will be in the chair tomorrow, and I will be back on Friday. And I thank you so very much for tapping in for me. You have a wonderful day. We'll see you on air tomorrow.
Sounds good.
That's it from me. If you missed any of the show, you can catch up with the podcast a little bit later, including bite-sized interviews whenever you get a chance. We'll be back tomorrow with Ben O'Shea from 8:45 live on thewest.com.au. He'll see you then.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.